Let's get started on the topics because our time really is fairly limited. But I'd like to have you a little bit of introduction to these major points about fundraising. Fundraising isn't overly complicated. Fundraising is, however, a set of good principles that you adapt intelligently for your organization. If you really want to make me miserable, come up and tell me what are the 10 easy steps for fundraising and getting a lot of money. There isn't such a thing. Fundraising is a set of good principles tested by time, some of them actually reflected in the Bible, and also verified by research what works. We have a new program that if you are interested on the numerical side of things, one of our staff has worked out a fundraising fitness program where you enter things from your database, assuming you have a database, and you can figure out what's working. So fundraising isn't overly complicated because it is, above all, helping somebody. But it is also a set of principles that we apply intelligently. So let's look at the first aspect. In this book that is going around for that you are looking at, there's actually a section on biblical principles of fundraising. Remember when the Israelites built the temple in the wilderness? They had to get the money from somewhere, and they were in the wilderness. They didn't even have foundations or corporations to give, and they were poor. The Lord helped them plan for this. There's another incident, I believe it's in Chronicles, I think, where King Solomon is going to build the temple. And when you look at those stages of a campaign, they're like what we do today for a successful capital campaign. So the Bible is really full of suggestions. Of course, the idea of generosity, the idea of a grateful heart. How do we thank those people who help us with our causes? And especially in this text where the Apostle Paul wrote so beautifully to the Corinthians, and he says, you have done so well in this, this, and this area. You're gifted. Now, I want you to excel in that gracious ministry of giving. Isn't that a beautiful verse? A beautiful way to think about fundraising. Can anybody think of any other Bible stories that involve fundraising or any texts that talk about getting money for your causes? Remember that the yes.
Ezra going up to build a temple.
Who? Oh, that's right. That's right. Rebuilding the temple. Certainly he had to have funding for that. Any other suggestions? Yes. Oh, absolutely. And I rather like that because my point here, folks, is it's not about the money. It's about a good cause that needs the money. And you notice when I met most of you, I said, where are you working? I'm curious about your cause. And that cause needs money. So one of the principles that we will talk about very shortly is how do we express that cause so that people who can help us will want to do so. Think about other Bible texts as well, where the Lord's work was accomplished because somebody managed to get funding and sometimes even funds from those who were not church members. And there's a lesson there. I think fundraising can actually be a form of evangelism because we talk to people about an exciting cause that we care about and invite them to be part of it. Okay, oh, I wanted to say one more thing. I'm a preacher's kid, and one of the texts that, of course, we grow up being very keen about is it's more blessed to give than to receive, right? Did you ever question that? Okay, you don't need to admit it. There is now secular research, folks, from as prestigious organizations as the National Institutes of Health, some universities, some research organizations that have proven that people who are generous, they live longer, they're healthier, and they're happier. And even Harvard Business Review stated in a research study that people who volunteer, even if they're busy, they're happier and they think they have more time. Isn't that a beautiful thought? Okay, here comes offer number one. If you're interested in that PowerPoint and the resources, I'm very happy to share that with you. That's what we do. We gather information to share with you. So if this is something you'd like to see, I will be happy to send that to you. I think it's a beautiful promise. I forgot to mention that those of you who here speak Spanish, tenemos materiales en español. Ese libro, tenemos el original y vamos a traducir todo. Así que escríbame. Okay, what's happening today? What is happening today in fundraising is very interesting because church and giving in general are intersecting more. First of all, faith and religion are major motivators. Even if people don't give to a church organization, their faith frequently guides up to 50% of their giving decisions. We used to live in a time when we frequently hid the fact that we were religious. You know, we kind of sidestepped. We didn't lie, but we kind of sidestepped this. Well, today, it is openly accepted that faith-based organizations are good for the community. Faith-based organizations are valuable for the growth of the individual and society. However, when you do request funds, remember where you're going to put the emphasis. And we'll talk about that when we're going to talk about making a case. Now, two things that have become very important today is people don't give because you have a need, unless there's an earthquake somewhere and you're the Red Cross. People give because you promise them outcomes. In fact, outcome funding was something that government started talking about quite a few years ago. You can promise anything you want. You can talk about how bad it is, how many needs there are. But unless you tell me what's going to change, what's going to be different, because I'm going to give you money, I don't think you'll get my money. Now, maybe because we know each other and I like what you do. Okay, I'll give you once. Please remember, outcomes are important. Other thing that is very significant is accountability and transparency. And we're not always used to that in faith-based organizations. In my dad's day, he could say, I'm the Lord's servant, trust me. That doesn't work anymore. Accountability. And with, I don't think most of you need to be approved by these organizations, but you need to be aware of them. Please look up. The first one is give.org. This is the ultimate watchdog. And I don't think most of you need to be on there, but what you should do is look at what are the criteria so that you will know what donors are looking for today. When I worked in an international development organization downtown, it actually took me 2 years to get us approved. But now many, many donors go to those websites, and I do if I don't know the organization, and see if they're approved. The second one is Charity Navigator. And I really encourage you to look this up because virtually all donors, unless you have some that are really closely related to you, they want to know what are you doing with the money, how much of it is going to operating, how much of it is going to help that particular person that you say you're helping. There are other websites, too. If you don't find those organizations, like I was giving recently to a horse rescue program, I like animals, and I wanted to check them out, and they were too small and too young to know about these, but I looked them up on GuideStar, which lists the Forum 990s. So know what your organization is doing and how you are represented. Like I said, I'm not sure that you need to be on there, but you need to know what today's requirements are. And what you have to do is get on the give.org website and see what their requirements are. They're very clearly listed. When you apply, that's when you do. It's very, very clear. And I recommend that each one of you look up one of your favorite charities and see how they are listed. I certainly check them out. Regrettably, we have ripoffs. Recently, there was a major scandal where a cancer organization, an affiliation of four, was giving like 0.03% of the millions it was raising, something like that. And so people know. You want people to trust you. And today is not quite as simple. Church member giving has changed. Church members no longer, as I already mentioned, in my dad's day where he could say, trust me, we'll use your money wisely. Church members want to know what happens with their money. Church members want a voice. Church members will question. And church members, in a little while you'll see how giving to churches has changed. Church members, if they don't see that their church is doing what they want, rightly or wrongly, they may take their giving somewhere else. So church member giving, we need to be aware of that in many ways church member giving runs parallel to how donors in general are giving today. And then I'll address that later. Okay, first thing for you to think about and maybe take about 5 minutes to talk to a partner. Fundraising is an exchange of values. If I value what you're doing, and you have expressed that to me very clearly, I will probably give. There's a former student of mine. Raise your hand unless you're embarrassed. Former student of mine. I had him in class at Union College. Haven't seen him since we both left. I love Union College. I'm seeing him, and I'm thinking, oh, when's the last time that I made a donation to Union College? Because we have a link. I had a good experience there. I value what Union College does, and he represents that. So let's look at it this way as a little bit of a diagram. And while I'm doing this, I'd like you to be thinking about your organization and what values does it express. Now, many people fall into the trap of saying, here's what we do. Take it a step further. Why do you do it? Let's take just the Adventist Church. When I say to a church that's trying to raise money, what are the values you represent? The usual answer I get is, well, we're Adventists. And you can fill in the blank, you know, basically, what more do you want to know? Okay, what is a church? A place to learn, a place to belong. Not long ago, somebody said, where do you go to church regularly? And I said, depends on the weekend. This weekend, I'm not sure where I am. Do you remember where I am? Okay. It's a place to develop talents. I played for my first wedding in Bolivia on a pipe organ at age 9. No, I'm sorry, pump organ. Age 9. It was a church that helped me develop those talents. You see the values as they're expanding? You fly. We met yesterday. Why? It's fun. My husband and I had a little plane. We flew. Why do you fly? What's the value of what you do? Look at it this way. And please be working with me. Michael, if I could ask you to circulate as people do these exercises, if you have questions, please raise your hand and Michael will come and whisper the answers to you. See how much faith I have in you? Okay. Look at it this way. If you think about a for-profit organization and its relationship to its customers, this for-profit organization offers to its customers either some service or a product or information or a combination. The customer takes advantage of it, pays for it, pays more than it costs, and this is what it's all about. It's the profit that we're talking about. Now, let's use this as the basis for thinking about our exchange relationship with our donors. Here is, if you can't see, please feel free to move. This is not a static session. All right, here's a nonprofit organization. First part is the same. The nonprofit offers a service or information or a product. You could even call education a product. All right, here we have our clients. Now we see some of the differences. The client, just like here, there's an exchange of values. The client, whether it's a Union College student, whether it's a listener to your radio program, whether it's somebody listening to your health message, they have to value what you do. But how can they do that if you don't express those values well? So here we are talking about a gap. Did you know that you're in this session because of this little gap here? You need to fill that gap. So, in many cases, the client can fill the gap, like Union College alumni give to their institution. But it's not going to happen if they don't understand the values. One of the important things about Union College was its very good math and science program. The people who were in pre-med got into med school at a higher rate than nationally. There's a value. Yes, it's an Adventist institution. That's the foundation. What I raised money for was those microscopes to help those students learn better. Okay, now if you think we're done, we're not done filling that gap. Okay? We need others to help us because, for example, when I have helped abuse shelters or worked with kids who have been abused or homeless people, they can't always give back or they can't even purchase a service. So we need to find what I will call friends who will turn into donors. And they will come from in many other parts of life, and together we will fill this gap. That means that you might talk to this group of donors in one way. You might talk to these groups in perhaps a different way, but it's still based on why do you do this? Why is it important to do this? Is it just because you were bored? I once helped a wealthy retired businessman start a foundation for research on anti-aging. Since I still have gray hair, obviously that didn't work. But I said to him, what's your mission? Why do you want to do this? And I still remember sitting there across the table, and he started thinking, and he said, I suppose to say Chuck was bored isn't enough, is it? Why do we do what we do? You know why I like to come to ASI? I work for the denomination. I help formal organizations. You folks fill the niches of life that are needed. Do you express that value as well as you could? Okay, we're still not done. You thought we were done, right? Every donor has a right to say, what's in it for me? A lot of donors don't want much. They just want to know you got the donation. I give fairly randomly because sometimes I meet an organization in a course like this that I really like, I give. Do you know that sometimes I actually have to call and say, did you get my donation? Sometimes it disappears down a black hole. Accountability, folks. I want to know what you did with my money. If I like what you did with my money, maybe the next time you ask me, I'll double it. I still give because people ask me by mail because I get around a lot to the rest of the world. And, you know, I've sometimes given $50, $50, $50 year after year. And if somebody said, last year with your $50, we were able to do this. If you would double it to $100 this year, we would do this. And we'll show you what we're going to do. Think about that. All right. I'd like you to take about 5 minutes, turn to a neighbor, and talk to them. What values does your organization represent? And be hard on each other. Pretend you're a donor. Talk to me. Now, who is here from Nepal? You are, sir. Okay, now Nepal is very recent in our memory. We saw pictures of it. Healthcare desperately needed. So for a while, you can ride on that. But then what? Why are you doing that? I met somebody from a school. Where's my teacher? There is principal right here. What's wrong with public school? Today, the values are pretty good in our public schools. Why do we need your kind of school? What's the value? I could fill in that blank having taught in academies. After I taught in an academy, I figured I could do anything I wanted. Okay, take about 5 minutes and no more. Would you mind circulating? Take about 5 minutes and no more and talk to each other. Tell me, what is the value you represent? Why I should bother giving to you? If you have questions, I'll do this side. Michael will do this side. Okay, I really hate to do this to you, but in light of the time that I've been allotted, we need to move on. I hope that you take what you learn here today. And if it helps you, I'll send you this as a PowerPoint and share this with your teams now that you've listened to me. One of the sad things is how people ask for money and there isn't a good match. My husband had the privilege of being a philanthropist with somebody else's money when he helped some wealthy people start a foundation. And he had his office at home. And those of you who know him, John Wagner, he is a rather mild-mannered man, but every now and then he would say, "How stupid do they think I am?" And I'd say, "What's wrong with him?" And people would be writing in, asking for money from this foundation, totally apart from what had been said. Here's what we will fund. Don't waste your time. Make sure there is that match between what you're doing and what the donor, whether it's a corporation, a business, an individual, another church, find out what is that match of values. Okay, let's talk about who should care about the cause. This and the next point are the two most important that I hope will help you the most. First is who is out there that might be able to give to you. First thing I'd like you to do is to say why anybody could. And the next step, after you have that kind of an open mind, we'll find out who really could. One thing that I have found it interesting was that Mrs. White even wrote about the fact that inviting others to give. I already brought up the factor of the children of Israel bringing with them from Egypt funds to build that temple. Where did they get that money? Certainly not from their fellow Israelites. They were slaves. They had nothing. The Lord provided, told them, go ask your neighbors. And we don't know. Maybe there was some influence there. We don't know about that. So let's think broadly about who could give. A few statistics, and this is the most definitive research that there is on giving in the United States. And I would like to have you notice, even though the United States has a number of foundations, and while I'm thinking of it, PSI can help you search for funding. Particularly, I'm thinking of Nepal. We can see if there's some funding from foundations. We can run searches for you. Now, that means I will send you potential candidates. You have to decide if they're good or not. Unfortunately, we don't have enough staff to help you write a proposal. But we can run searches for you and help you that way. If you're from Canada, Lynn, you do that in Canada. Thank you. So notice how interesting that fully 80% of funding, this isn't counting government, and there is some good money for some of your causes from government. We'll address that in just a minute. 80% of the funding comes from people giving to people with good causes. Where does the money go? Okay, here's an interesting point. Where's the biggest chunk? You think it's a trick question, folks. It's simply religion. Okay, I would like you to know that in around 1985 to 87, right around that time period, would you like to guess what the percent was? It was over 50%. Now, giving itself hasn't gone down except briefly in 2008, it dipped. Remember, we had a bad recession. Then it started. I'll show you that in a minute. But what's happening? If people don't feel confident in their church and the way the church uses money, if they don't feel like they belong there, if they don't agree with some things, right or wrong, that's not for me to judge, they will give elsewhere. Giving has stayed approximately 2% of the GDP for a very long time. We keep trying to raise it. It keeps staying. At least it's not dipping for the most part. But we can see how church member attitudes have changed. Now, you might be able to get funding under the education aspect. Some of the rest of you whose causes I've learned about might find funding under the human service chunk. Health has dropped considerably because you know what the changes in health are, where there are many more for-profits, many mergers, huge systems. So health has definitely dropped. Now, here's an interesting one. You can see the effect of 2008, where it dropped down, then again in 2009, but now it keeps going up consistently. And so far this year, the first half of this year, giving has been good. This is a good time for you to think about good fundraising to get people in the habit of giving. You see, that's one of the important things, and that's also the role that religion plays in giving, which is when we get people in the habit of giving, whether it is because they feel a compulsion to, because they are religious, whether they like what you're doing, it's part of their belief system, this is a good time to start a good fundraising program. Now, think about your possible donors, and I will illustrate this in a minute of what you can do. Who could be your donors? Start with what I would say is the innermost circle. Who knows you the most? Who trusts you the most? Who likes you the most? This is why when I was raising money for Union College, I was actually dumped in the deep end of the pool because, I don't know if the students remembered, but we had a huge debt and the school could have gone under. Well, we had marvelous alumni who believed in the institution even though we openly said, there's a debt. It's hard to explain. There's a debt. It wasn't as bad as Greece, but it was not a good situation. And because of loyalty, because they were tied to us, they gave. That was where I got started in fundraising, with people who cared about the institution. But it was also on me to ask correctly, why would I give to your English program, your science program, your theology program? What'd you do with the money? Am I giving money that's going to go down the hole again? That moves to the next point I will make, which is making a case. So think about all of those possible donors, and I'll illustrate how to work this in a minute. But let's address government funding. Government funding can be a little ticklish, but first of all, folks, whose money is it? Come on. Thank you. That wasn't a trick question. It's yours. Government money is not philanthropy. Government money is a contract. They offer money for a certain cause. Education and social services are two of the most important. You look up what they require. You write a proposal. They say, we want this changed. You say, okay, we can do it. Or you say, that goes against our values, our faith system. You don't proceed. I have yet to see a government proposal that reneged on what it said it would do. More likely, government wants to know what you did with the money, which is only right. You know, that's the accountability issue. Now, I will readily admit that perhaps your team doesn't feel comfortable with it. Perhaps you don't feel that's right for your image. But remember what we said earlier. I was very interested. One time I was conducting a course for a big group, and I had the luxury of having them for a day and a half. So at the end, I said, questions? And somebody said, is it okay to take money from casinos? And that's your ultimate tricky question. So don't try to answer it quickly. And so there was one woman who said, absolutely wrong. Well, here's what fascinated me. I couldn't believe it, but I had a number of youngish pastors who started speaking up. And I was so entranced, I was holding the microphone, because they were coming up with one example in the Bible after another when the Lord's work was accomplished with money that had been offered to idols. Now, I could spend the next 2 hours talking about the ethics of decision-making like this. You have to know what works for you. But folks, if it's going to do something good, there was a big Adventist hospital where Native Americans were grateful how they had been treated, and they wanted to give money. Well, their money came from a casino. No, this wasn't an Adventist hospital. It was a Christian hospital. And so they questioned it. They said, well, casinos, you know, that's wrong. But why not honor the generosity of the tribe? So you have to know what to do. But I'm bringing it up. Don't knock government money if it can help you serve that person you are dedicated to serving. Okay. Now, let's illustrate this quickly and talk about how do you make these decisions. The fundraising school at the Indiana University School of Philanthropy has this design. This is your world. You are in here. I hope your board is in there. I understand this afternoon Steve Dickman will have a board session, and I'm sure it'll be a good one. Your donors who are already supporting you, and I support a number of ASI members, so I'm in there sometimes. Now, I trust you've made this kind of a list in your mind, if not on paper. Have you thought of at least one new donor? Okay, there's a world of donors out there. Generosity. Here's how you decide, and this is a fundraising school principles. Here's how you decide who are your best donors and where to put them on these circles. Obviously, out here is your universe of prospects who could be giving to you. How do you get them on the first rung of the ladder, on the next? How do you work them toward being loyal donors? Three qualities. The first is linkage. What kind of a link do they have? I appreciate those of you in here who speak Spanish. I will listen to any Hispanic organization, because when I was a refugee kid, was a kid without a country, and we were plopped in the Hispanic country, some of the nicest people I will always remember. I have that background. I have a link. I have a loyalty. What is the link to the institution? Secondly, ability to give. And just because somebody has money to give, remember the widow's mite. Sometimes we do people a disservice because we don't include them. I've had people at both ends of the scale, a wealthy potential donor and somebody who is barely getting by, both of them say to me almost these exact words, "It's about time you asked me." Because being involved in something meaningful, making a difference, is, I believe, something that God put inside of us. Then the interest factor. Here's where your values come in. How can you interest somebody? What are you doing? You see, the values you expressed come together with the programs that you have. That's what's going to attract me. If you tell me what's important about this, going to the remote areas of Alaska, which I know somewhat, there's a value in that. I can list a number of spiritual as well as just plain human values there. I might give if he tells me correctly. Now, there's one other thing that comes into this. Be sure you know two things. Be sure you ask for an amount. When I was a kid growing up in Brooklyn, New York, and we still did the old-fashioned in-gathering, we were told to go around and knock on doors, and why my parents thought I could go through those tenements and knock on doors, I'll never know. But we would go to those doors and say, "Whatever you can give will help." So how much do you think I got? Of course, in those days, I was happy for a quarter. But if I tell you that if you give me $100, that child in the Ugandan orphanage is going to be able to go to school, have meals for a month, and get a new outfit. Aha! I don't care about, well, yeah, I do care about the outfit. The school, oh, definitely. You see, now we're starting to put the pieces together. So, put your donors where they belong. You pay most attention to these. But don't forget these out here. And in a minute, I'll talk just a bit about social media. Social media cuts across all of these. Your good website, can I give easily by the website? I've had some bad experiences with organizations like yours where I actually had to call you and say, I need to write something that's an antiquated thing, like a check. I got to go dig through my files and find one to send it to you. And then I don't hear. Be sure you're accountable. Okay, unfortunately, we don't have enough time for the exercises I'd love to have you do. But let's move on with a couple of other things. Where did I put my clicker? Oh, there it is. We do need to understand what motivates people to give. One of the biggest motivators that comes across in almost all research is the chance to make a difference. That's a beautiful factor, whether people are Adventists, whether they're atheists, whether they're Muslims, the chance to make a difference. We need to understand what motivates people. Recognition is very important. Taxes are very important, but they're not always the biggest reason. Knowing what my money did for your organization, being part of something that's bigger than myself. For a number of years, I had teenagers who had problems living with me, and consequently my gray hair. And now I can't take them in. I'm constantly traveling. I have a different kind of life, but I support an organization called CASA. I support some of the ASI organizations that deal with especially orphanages. Why? Because I have an interest in it. I have a link. As a kid, I was homeless, but I did have parents. So what makes me give? Also, notice, feels good. What did I tell you earlier? People who are generous, they live longer, they're healthier, they're happier. please remember, if you write an email to me, of course, Michael Brown's name is easier to spell than mine. Feel free to write to him, too. And we will send you this PowerPoint. Sometimes I use this as an illustration. How many faces do you see there? At first glance, you see one big one, right? Then you start looking a little more closely. Oh, well, look at that. The nose and the eye turn into a man. So there's two people. The ear turns into a woman. And if you look in some of the upper left, you have at least three faces. Can you see those? Okay, if you can't see those, come to me afterwards and I'll point them out to you. There's one on the right. You see it? And of course, since I love animals, I count the dog's face. Okay, what's my point here in showing you this? Your donors are not always apparent, but they might be there. Think broadly, but think strategically and wisely. Don't waste your time on somebody who clearly doesn't have an interest in what you're doing. Go to the next donor. Maybe you'll win over that one. And avoid the Bill Gates syndrome. Just because somebody has money, do they give to you? Sometimes a widow's mite will do more for you than the Bill Gates idea. All right, let's move on to making a case. When you make a case, think of it this way. The first thing that you have to spell out to me as a donor, and you'll see several things now starting to come together. The first thing is that I have to understand what is the problem you're dealing with and the need that you're meeting. If I don't have that context, if you simply tell me, I want to go feed the homeless of Washington, D.C. My question is going to be, so what? First of all, why are the homeless? Here is a good example of this. This was actually a cartoon in the Washington Post. Isn't this a powerful cartoon? You know that a turtle cannot upright itself. It needs help. But what are they saying? Ignore him. He's just lazy. How well do we explain what the problem or need is? However, I'm not going to give to the fact that you have a problem. I'm going to, and here it comes again, I'm going to give because you promised me that there's an outcome. Something's going to be different because I'm going to feed that homeless person who's homeless because he's a veteran, and Washington has a lot of those, unfortunately. I'm going to give so that he can get counseling and food, get in better health, and get a job, which most of them want. I know them. Tell me what's going to be different and better, but I'm not going to listen to this if I don't understand this. And now we circle back to something you already did. Why is this important? What is the value? How we talk about it is important. Now you notice that I haven't said anything yet about the details. Because too many people start with a detail. Too many people start with the details. I want to know what's the problem. What will fix it? Why should we do this? Now tell me who's going to do it. When? When can I expect results? Where are you going to do it? Do you have a building to do it in? I do need to know the details. Making a case, and I hope that you folks get together with your volunteers, your teams, your donors, and work through some of these. There's more explanation. You can get the book that's going around through AdventSource. I may have forgotten to say that, and it's only $26, which is really cheap. Here is an interesting example, and I don't know who sent this to me, but I love it. Here's Noah. Notice the ark back there? Saying, is it true, Lord, that a million years to man are like a second of time to you? Lesson number one, donors don't like you to beat around the bush. The good Lord must have been saying, I wonder what he's getting at. So here's the Lord. He's a great donor. So he says, yes. But then he says, why do you ask, Noah? Okay, Watch the body language. Please do not do fundraising for your cause with a sense of apology. Do it with the right kind of pride because it's about your service. Okay, so he stammers around. Well, a small request, sir. Okay. Second lesson, do not do it with apology. Third lesson, a small request, and notice what comes next. How about giving me $1 million? The Lord must really be shaking his head at this point and saying, poor Noah, I need to send him to the fundraising school or PSI. And then he says, you know, for the building project and all, would you give to something that vague? What is that $1 million going to do? And then notice his surprise. Certainly, Noah, just a second. People like to give. But he's surprised. There's a real set of lessons in that little cartoon. I want to play you this because it is one of the best examples of what it means to really express your case. Beautiful example of how can we say it. And above all, folks, please remember, your mission statement is important. Are you adhering to your mission? Does your plan reflect your mission? And as this says, be careful with the mission. If you write a foundation proposal, people want to know, what is your mission? Comes back to the why and as a basis for what you do. Okay, we don't have much time left. I will do the last 2 points or 3 points quite quickly. The tools. This, folks, is where you can build a team. Some people will never want to ask personally. For them, it's as bad as, well, you know, public speaking is feared more than snakes, and it's a form of public speaking. But this is where you can truly build a team. You can get people who write well and like to research to do proposals. You can get young people involved with all that social media, which is so important for fundraising today. You can have people use the phone to say thank you. There are so many ways, but it does take a good plan. And please be aware that right in here is where you need that one-on-one. Look people in the eye and say, your $1,000 will do this. Social media works all the way through. People like still, email is still very good. Your website, folks, about 65% of people check out your website, whether they're going to give it through the web or not. Really important. So think about matching the tools with where your donors are, but it also leads to another aspect, which is involving others. This might be a little small for you. It says maybe you shouldn't send out emails when you're tired. The two people facing a big army, you get it? Okay. Now, the one-on-one request is still the most important. And yet some people feel this way. They feel intimidated by approaching a donor. If you're really committed to what you are doing, it's not you doing the talking. You're doing it on behalf of the cause that you are supporting. And I would be the first to say, not everybody needs to or should ask individually, which goes back to use people's talents. Okay, who should be involved? Definitely not a solo performer. Or solo performance. If you are with a church, definitely the pastor needs to be involved, but it's not the pastor's campaign. If you are the director of your project, build a team around you. As you will see in a few minutes, fundraising is the right person asking the right prospect in the right way for the right cause, and we'll continue that in just a minute. All segments of your constituents can have a role. I've been a donor to an organization that does orphanages, and the director of that is one of my best friends. And one day she wrote, boy, I wish I could just disband my board. They're useless, and those meetings are a waste of time. And because we're friends, I could be pretty frank, and I said, well, obviously you're not using your board right. Kick them out and get a new board. It was a little bit harsh, but she's a friend, so I could get by with it. How do you build a team around you? People who need to know what you're doing. And make sure that it's not a job that they're going to hate coming to, because then eventually they're volunteers and they won't come. Like this. This is the last time I volunteer to serve on the building committee. Okay. Do you need a plan? Yes. You need a plan. A plan tells you where you're going. And if you don't have a plan, how will you know that you've arrived? And more donors say, and I've had this happen, where's your plan? I want to see your plan before I give to you. A plan is accountability. A plan is a roadmap for the success that your organization has. Now, too many people get bogged down by a plan. Some of us are inherently good at planning, others are not. Get somebody to help you with a plan. Now, that's something that Michael and I can frequently do, is sit down with people, look, who could be your donors? Where do we put them in your plan? Who will help with the plan? Who will carry out certain tasks? And there is a chapter in there about planning. Otherwise, if you don't plan, you could be like these two unfortunate dinosaurs. We missed the deadline. Now, this is a lot to balance, but it's exciting, isn't it? I hope as you've sat here, and I'm not quite done, I hope as you've sat here, you've thought of at least one way to boost up your fundraising, at least one new donor, at least one way that you can use the volume or PSI services. I remember, we're not miracle workers, but we can help you think about what you do. And frequently, when Michael and I travel, we will try to have multiple appointments, like I'm going back to Washington. Oh, I am in Washington State. But I did some training some months ago, and people said, okay, we'll work on this, this, and this, and we're going to have another meeting with people coming together. And this is what Michael and I do. And if we can't reach you, sometimes we will use our budget to send somebody else to you. If you're here today, I know you're committed to really carrying out your cause. We want to help you with that. A few final thoughts. Fundraising is, and this sort of wraps up, and if you think about it, what we just talked about. The right person asking. Sometimes I haven't been the right person. One time I sent a student. Use lots of volunteers. Of course, you have to train both to know how to do it right, but that's fun. Sometimes they wanted to see the president or the board chair. Fine. Maybe I went with them, did a lot of the talking, but they were the presence there. Remember when Jesus sent people out two by two? He knew what he was doing. The right prospect. Now we're back to those good circles. We are looking at who could give and being realistic about it. For the right cause, here's where the interest comes in. What is the right cause? You've listened to me for a little over an hour. I bet every one of you could pinpoint a cause or two that I could give to or would give to. I'm a refugee. Anybody here working with refugees? Aha, you've already identified me as a donor, I'll bet. Okay, I've been a teacher, academy teacher. You already know I love animals. Love Union College. Okay. Pardon? Watch television? Oh, in your case, I'd probably give because I like you. Okay. But that's also an illustration, right? Think about it. I don't necessarily like the terms friend-raising or relationship building, but there is a lot to it. I'm afraid that simplifies the process too much, but relationships do count. In the right way, this is where your toolbox. How many people can you gather around? Sometimes I have served. I remember serving on the development committee of the local Humane Society. I didn't want to be a member of the board. I traveled too much. But I liked it. And we did a yearly event called the Bow Wow Brunch. You can tell I enjoyed that, and I was able to help them in that way by advising them on the event. For the right amount, tell me what my money does. Avoid these obscure statements of, well, we need $10 million, and if you could give, please help. The worst thing is when I see pastors get up and say, you know, we're all excited about the capital campaign. Who's going to volunteer? Okay, what kind of decision are you going to make under those circumstances? Planning. At the right time. This is a good time for raising funds. For the most part, people are feeling fairly comfortable. Debates notwithstanding. For the most part, the nonprofit sector has a good image. There is plenty of question going around. Internationally, fundraising is no longer the purview of just America. There's a fundraisers association in New Zealand and Kenya, Austria. I have trained fundraisers all the way from Ukraine to Sydney, Australia. It's a global thing. So if you are here for a global cause, many of these principles apply, but of course you have to put them into your cultural context. I just finished writing a book on diversity and philanthropy. It will be featured on our website. The exciting thing to write, because I saw how different cultures, traditions, religions give. So, to close, what do you need? You do need good leadership. You do need a team. You need people who are willing to work. Organize, folks. If you're the visionary, if you're the one who just gets the idea, get somebody who will help you plan. One of my bosses at the School of Philanthropy was best friends with a guy who started Habitat. There was a person with vision. Boy, did he need people to help him plan and take it further. Attention to the details. A database is hugely important. I gave to a church once in a city that, of course, will be unnamed because I liked the woman who was in my class and I liked what she was doing. Problem number one was, at the moment, my husband and I have a commuter marriage, and I wrote to him and said, please, give such and such. We do that to keep the donations straight. And so he said, well, I can't do it on the website. So I wrote to the lady, got an address, and did that thing called check writing. And a month later, she wrote me this beautiful email saying, you know, your giving to our cause as a stranger motivated others. We have really been able to, and I didn't give a big amount, but you really helped. When do we get the money? Fortunately, my husband had scanned the check and sent the scan to me. I wrote back immediately and I said, you already got it. Here's the proof. And she wrote back immediately. So lesson number one there was thank immediately, folks. Thank. That's a very biblical principle. And she wrote back immediately and her first words were, uh-oh, I guess I better check with my treasurer on what happened to your check. How am I feeling about that? Can you tell out of the tone, from the tone of my voice? I don't know what my money did. She hasn't asked me again, and she never told me what they did with the money. I think it went down a black hole. Stewardship. Good stewardship. Accountability. And remember to communicate. People want to know what's going on internally and externally. And also, coming back again to the accountability factor, and especially as faith-based organizations, we're not always as conscious of this. But notice what this says. Hey, what did we tell you? No phone at dinner time, unless you're soliciting money for our bogus charity. This is not uncommon. I have cartoons from Harvard Business Review and some of the Forbes magazines. There's one of an elderly woman putting money into the Salvation Army bucket. And there's, of course, the Santa Claus. And she looks at him and says, how will I know that you're not going to go out and spend my money on eggnog? People want to know what you do with their money. Don't forget to thank. Don't forget good stewardship. It's probably, I don't want you to quote me directly, but 80% preparation and 20% asking, just as an example. But then you'll be more successful. Now, I couldn't resist putting this proverb up there because it's from my homeland. Who does not thank for little will not thank for much. Up to 60 and 65% of people cycle out of giving because of how the organization treats them. How is your phone answered? Is your email another of those black holes? I actually have a file in my Outlook that says emails not responded to, not by me, by others. You don't want to be in that black hole because your donors will give up on you. Good stewardship. Ask yourself, what if we don't do this? Because that will also, and this is the only touch of negativity in my presentation. But if you say, if we don't get the money, what will happen? When I once was doing a lot of writing and research and speaking on dysfunctional organizations, I contacted the IRS. Now we have more exact figures. But I said, how many nonprofits die per year? Because I was doing a lot of workshops on warning signs of dysfunctional organizations. And now some rules have changed. They could tell me exactly, but they said, you know, we figure out of the about 1.35 at that time nonprofits in America, which counted churches, they said, we figure about 18,000 die per year. It's not about you. It's about who doesn't get served if your organization dies. So what can go wrong? If you disappoint your donors, if you have questionable ethics in making decisions, use the money the way you have promised the donor. And if you have to change, tell me about it. If there's a good reason, I'm fine with it. I once gave to an academy because they wanted to buy an organ. I was a perfect donor, academy, former academy teacher. I'm an organist. Yeah, fine. Well, when it came time to do taxes, my husband said, hey, you're missing that receipt. So I wrote to them, and they said, what donation? And so they said, well, how do we write you a thank you letter? I said, I don't even need the thank you. I just want a receipt. And then about half a year later, they called me and said, do you mind if we use your money for handbells instead of an organ? Okay. Now, I was fine with that, but they couldn't find and send me a receipt? Come on. Okay. Asking before you have a good plan. Now, one last thing, the perception of no need. And sometimes church organizations have these problems. What does my money do? I gave you my tithe. What more do you want? This comes all the way back to making a case and explaining. We have this amount of money to carry out these. Quick example. When I was working in Indianapolis for the School of Philanthropy, the Lilly Endowment, one of the biggest foundations in the country, said all public schools should have a foundation for raising funds for their school. And we want you to train those people. I said, sure. Then I got to thinking, whoa, wait a minute. They get a lot of my tax money. How do I help them make a case? Since I mentioned music, I said, okay, the money you get from the city, state, helps you have a band program. We don't have enough money for instruments, so the kids will have to buy their own instruments. We'll give you a halftime music teacher, and we'll give you music just enough for some of the marches at football games. Is that enough for your child? Oh, and they can wear black and white. We don't have uniforms. Now, if nothing else, what about those kids who couldn't afford an instrument? Would you give to this? Here's what we're doing, but we need more instruments. You see where I'm going with this? I think we're almost done. Fundraising is a process. Remember, It's a process. It's not a quick and easy 10 steps. Secondly, it's a team effort. And yes, I know, sometimes it's easier to do it yourself, especially those of you who've had little kids, and many of you have had. You know, sometimes it's easier to do it yourself than to have the kid do it. But when will the kid get that experience and the fun of making those cookies, even if the kitchen is a mess? It requires an investment of resources. The point is how much. And we can help you with some of that. It's going to cost you more money to raise money if you're not seasoned at it. But people do want to know that. It requires accountability, and it does take time. But once you get on a roll, folks, keeping it going is a pleasure. I like to keep involved. There are certain organizations I've given to. One of them is right here downstairs. I don't mind saying how it happened, ASAP. Many years ago, when I was a faculty at Union College, I went and took a bunch of students to work in the refugee camps. Got acquainted with Judy Aitken. Stayed friends. She started her own organization, came back. I saw the difference because I've been back to Thailand a number of times. I'm still a donor. That's what makes it so good. Don't overthink it. I know I've tried to feed you a whole lot of information in a very short time. Don't overthink it, but be careful. Here are five steps. If I did want to summarize it for you, what are the values? Why are you doing this? Build a case on that. Find the donors where there's a match there. Use the right tool. Thank and steward. And look at how everything fits under one of those factors. Remember, it's not about the money. It's about good causes that have a price tag. And don't forget, successful fundraising, as well as the information about PSI. Look up some of our podcasts. We have lots of resources, either online that I can send you, or we have books we can lend you. And as I said, Michael and I are certainly available from anywhere from a phone call, or if there's an area we're going to, we'll be happy to meet with you. Feel free to email us. We're both traveling a great deal, but we both also do email while we're traveling. I want to thank you for coming. It's been a pleasure to meet many of you. And I wish you God's blessings.
This media was produced by Audioverse for ASI, Adventist Layman's Services and Industries. If you would like to learn more about ASI, please visit www.asiministries.org. Or if you would like to listen to more free online sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.